You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Dawn, a resident at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. This interview was originally recorded on August 4th, 2020. Can I get you to introduce yourself?
Oh, my name is Don, and I live at Riverside Glen. I am 86 years old, and I've had quite a life in growing up and continuing into manhood. And I've been up the hill and down the hill and back up again. I first want to mention about... And living here at Riverside Glen, I think we all should, everybody that's living here, should be very, very thankful that we were here through the worst times, because I think Bryce deserves, although he was tough at times, I think it was the best thing that he could do to help us out and keep us safe. And he deserves a lot of credit for what he has done here. I also have my wife in long-term care. Her name is Ruth, and we've been married 68 years, and we're separated right now, and I haven't seen her for a while, but I talked to her on the phone, and I hope that... things break open pretty soon so I can go over and enjoy some time with her. Mm-hmm. Now, I was a young boy and growing up in Goderich, Ontario, and I had come from a hard-working family, and my dad was in a worked in a creamery for 52 years, and he come home and worked 10 hours a day there, and then come home and work in the gardens. He had 5 acres. We had 5 acres of gardening right in Goderich. Wow. At the top of Lake Huron, and he would work in the gardens in after hours, and growing up, we didn't have much time to play because we also had to come home from school and work in these gardens. Times were tough, and my dad managed to provide a very good living for those times because he worked his heart out. But also, my mother was a wonderful person. And my mom and dad got along tremendously, and I have two sisters, and one sister right now is 95 years old. She still drives the car, and my other sister is in a nursing home in Clinton, Ontario. You jump in any time, I don't know what, but anyhow.
Are you the baby?
I'm the baby.
Yeah.
And back in those days, the snow was a lot worse than it is today. And we had to walk a mile to school in the morning, come home for lunch, and walk a mile back, and then a mile back home after school. And if it wasn't for my sisters and the amount of snow, because they didn't clear the snow back in those days, they would pull me each, would grab my hand and pull me across the drifts so I wouldn't go out of sight, the snow. And as I say, We have had lots of experience in helping each other and working hard at in my dad's gardens, and we always had enough to eat. Where a lot of parents back in those days, their families didn't have, they weren't fortunate enough to have the things that we did growing up, but we worked for everything we had. I was started playing hockey at a very young age. I was a pretty good hockey player. I was been told that I was one of the best hockey players that ever come out of Goderich. I told them they were all full of it, but this is what even the town council in Goderich used to say I was. But I think they were just trying to praise me. But anyhow, I enjoyed it. Enjoyed it growing up very much, and playing hockey, and played ball in the summer, hockey in the winter, and went to school and went to high school and met my my wife in school, and we went to school together and married at 18 years of age. And back in those days, they married earlier than they do today. But I have a lovely wife, and she's a beautiful girl. And I always say she was the best-looking girl in Goderich. But I also told her she was lucky to have me. And she just smiles. So I don't know what that smile means, but we get along tremendously, and I raised five children, four boys and one girl, and they've all grown up to be good people. They've all done well. They've all have good jobs even today, and and I've been accused of being a little tough, especially on my daughter, and I can remember one instance with my daughter that she came home one day and asked me that if she could go to the dance on Friday nights at high school. And I said, yes, you can go as long as you're home by 12 o'clock. Well, she said, oh, Dad, that's not fair, because she says, all the other girls, they can stay out till 1:30. And I said, yes, but you're not one of those. So she was a little upset, and I said to her, well, honey, I said, when you grow up and get married and have a family, you'll understand why I've said no to you. And that happened, after she was married and had a raising of family, she came one day to me and said, well, Dad, I understand now why you wouldn't let me stay out to 1:30 to go to that dance years ago. And I said, well, I'm glad you had the opportunity to experience that, what I experienced, and you found out why I said no. So anything you want to say, Jenny?
Well, I was going to say, I think it's incredible. You have to wait so many years to get the satisfaction of knowing that your kids understand the decisions you make, you know?
Yes.
That you have to be very patient, I think.
But they all grew up, and we never had a moment's problems with them. Any of them, and I don't think too many families could say that, but I might have been a little hard on them when they were growing up, but they've proven to me that the way we, my wife and I, brought our family up, that it paid off in the long run. But anyhow, I have some of my my life that it's kind of private, and I don't very well like to speak too much about it. I'm going to say a few words and about my life. Is after we were married, I got into drinking, and I wasn't a nice, very nice person when I drank, and they always say you hurt the ones you love the most, and that happened. And for 9 years I abused myself and probably the family by using drinking. And there came a day in my life where I looked at myself in the mirror, and I didn't like what I seen. And I said, I'm going to have to do something with my life. If I don't, we're going to be in problems. So cutting it short, I went to a program called AA. You've heard of that?
Yeah.
And I had my last drink on May the 13th, 1961.
Wow.
And I haven't had a drink of alcohol since. And I've tried to do since coming to the program and using the program, and I say that's the only thing that can help an alcoholic is a person from that is a member of the organization or the program. And you may think, or they may say, doctors and everything can help you. Nobody can help you except another alcoholic. And I'm speaking from experience, okay?
Yeah.
And I seem to be doing all the talking. But anyhow,
it makes my job easier.
Yes.
I mean, I like when people take the lead because they share what they want to open up about, you know?
Yes. As I say, I went to a lot of meetings, and I believe that that's what you have to do if you want to stay sober and get sober, is go to a lot of meetings and keep an open mind. And I've always maintained that if you follow the program, you will get rewarded by staying sober. If it's the most important thing in the world, that you have to do these things if you want to stay sober. And I, after sober for a few years, you start, and I believe you have to get some sobriety before you try and help somebody else. There's a lot of people out there go to two or three meetings and they think they can help other people, but the problem is, in the first little while, you have to get sober, and you have to stay sober, mm-hmm. and you got to work the program and the steps, and I think you got to get these things before you try and help somebody else. Because you have enough trouble staying sober yourself, let alone taking on the load of trying to help somebody else. Hmm. I got very active after a while in Alcoholics Anonymous and did many, many, many step goals. People calling in and wanting help. And of course, when they, I might just say that A didn't have a, if you didn't know somebody to get to, there was no phone in Kitchener where we were living at the time. Hmm. And I was one of the three people that went to Bell Telephone, and we got a phone number for Alcoholics Anonymous at no cost for the rest of our lives.
Wow.
This was a big step to helping people if they had a problem, was to call this number, and one of us, there was a bunch of us that would take calls, and we would go on this 12-step call. If a woman called in, we would never go alone on a 12-step call. We always made sure that we took a woman along, and vice versa if it was a man. So I could tell you, stand here all day and tell you some of the experiences we had, but the reward is to see a person come into AA and see them grow. And first of all, they didn't want nothing to do with it, didn't like this and didn't like that, but to see them grow, and that's where the reward is of helping somebody. It's to see somebody grow in AA and become a complete different person.
I bet.
And one of the first things you have to do is forgive yourself before you can help somebody else. Now, you can do this by doing 12-step calls and doing all kinds of, if they need help, they call and you go right away. And so anyhow, and not very often do I ever tell anybody about this. So it's consequently that I changed from the person that I was to a person that wanted to help other people. And this is what I've done over the years. And I have had the pleasure of speaking at many conferences and in the United States and Canada, and try and say what you want to say. At times it's very, very hard. But every time you speak, I have found that I can, although I was quite nervous at the start, the more you done it, the easier it begot. And there again, just one of the many ways that I had changed, and I changed at home, and the home was not a home at one time, but it became a family again. And our home was completely different than it was when I was abusing alcohol. And I finished hockey, and I coached hockey for many years. And I worked for the Kitchener Police Department for 2 years, helping the young guys that are coming in for problem drinking, and they had no place to send them to get help. So they would send them to another fellow member, and we took on the job to work with these kids and help them. And I'm quite sure we did. We started a ball team, and had one of the best ball teams in Kitchener ever saw. We enjoyed it very, very much. And the other fellow was a lawyer, a friend of mine I met in the program. We took on the job of looking after these kids and helping them. And I think it would be right if I said I think we've done that. We help the kids in one way, shape, or form. You try to tell a 16-year-old kid what to do, then it's a hard thing. But we accomplished something that was been there impossible, but we put our heart and souls in it to say that we're going to make this work. And as I say, we've done this for 2 years, then it was time to move on and to other things, and Don't you do me any talking at all?
I can ask some questions if you like. Yeah. I mean, one observation, I haven't really heard a lot from people's experiences from within AA, and it strikes me as a really a special type of support when you have that lived experience with the struggle and you kind of get to come in with the perspective of knowing there is another side while supporting people who don't know that yet. And yeah, that seems really powerful. Like other types of support, sometimes people train to support people or they go to school for it, but they don't have the lived experience with it. But with AA, it seems integral to the support is that piece where you yourself have overcome it and are able to kind of give people something to work towards or something to hope for, you know? It's just really inspiring. I feel like, especially when you're talking about working with the youth, like I didn't know that there was a department of the police who focused on when the problems were drinking related and looked to people who could support that particular struggle. That sounds really brilliant. It also sounds very challenging, to be honest.
Well, I was a licensed car mechanic for many years. And after I got sober in AA, things started to progress for me. Steps up. I went from working on the bench as a mechanic. I was a foreman in a very big garage, and I was there for many years, and ended up with bleeding ulcers and everything because handling 29 mechanics, and it was quite a job handling all those. So the doctor told me I had to get out of there and even go to a smaller place without having the pressures that you find and that I was finding in a big dealership like that. But anyhow, I moved back to Goderich from Kitchener, and I worked as a service manager for the GM dealer in Goderich. And 4 years I stayed, and life was completely different to what I was kind of, it was slower. And they give me an opportunity to do more 12-step work, and no matter where you go, there's always people that need help. And it's a funny thing about alcohol is that it doesn't care who it attacks. And we had in our meetings lawyers, doctors, priests, ministers, we had all kinds of type of people because alcohol didn't care who it got a hold of. But in Goderich, I seemed to settle down again, and we had some real good years there, our children were still in the Guelph area here, and they were after us all the time to move back to Guelph because they said if something ever happens to you, we wouldn't be able to help you. Mm-hmm. So my wife, finally, I think she got sick of them trying to get her back. She says, you find me a nice home in Guelph, and I'll move back. Well, right off the bat, they went to the Arboretum, which is a very nice place. And she said they found a house that was for sale, and we talked to the people, and we made a deal, and we ended up coming to Guelph. And I think that was 12 years ago, maybe. Wow. And we fell in love with Guelph and the Arboretum, and it was a very nice place. People were friendly, and I've heard people say that they couldn't afford to live where they were because they were the big wigs of the thing. And I said to myself, well, they let me in. It's going to be common because anyhow, they knew nothing about me.
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Don, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence.
We enjoyed it there for about 5 years, and my wife had a stroke. And before that, after we retired, we used to go on cruises every winter, and we've been a large part of the world. We've been on cruises, and if you asked my wife what's the best cruise she ever had, she'll tell you Alaska.
Oh, and, wow.
It's beautiful there. And instead of taking a 7-day cruise, we went for 17 days, and we flew to Alaska, and we took 10 days, and we toured all around Alaska and learned a lot of things about Alaska and different things, interesting things. And then we caught the ship to come home from Seaward. We got the ship, and we had 6 stops on the way to home before we got to Vancouver. And that was a beautiful, beautiful trip.
I bet.
But we've had some other beautiful, beautiful trips. And it seemed to me, what I grew into, I don't know if that's the proper way of saying it, but what I've, before when I was drinking, I never appreciated nothing. I didn't see nothing. And going on these cruises and everything, I could see the wonders of the world in there, you know, and understand that even a flower, and you know, I never would say this when I was drinking, but today I look at the flowers and say, look at those beautiful flowers, aren't they nice? And I can see things today that I never saw until I came to me. And we went on different cruises, of course. We went a lot across the Atlantic Ocean. 6.5 days, we were 5 miles from the African border. Saw the Rock of Gibraltar, cruised into the Mediterranean, and went into some place that went into this. We stopped in Spain when we got to the Mediterranean, and we got off the ship and went to this church. And I used to, when I was a young fella, I used to go to church every Sunday, and I sang in the choir, but I got away from it. And I still, even today, I know there's a man upstairs that helped me get sober, and he helps me through the rough times. And every time that we have a major, something major in our lives, my wife and I, we would always put the question into the hands of the man upstairs, and if it went through, it was meant to be, and if it didn't go through, sometimes you were disappointed, it wasn't meant to be. Now, I became a very good friend of mine was a minister. And he would, and somebody with problems, he would come to me and say, when I say, I would say to him, you realize that I will not go on any 12-step call unless the person that needs the help calls. Mm-hmm. Somebody else sending them on there and say, you got to go, will never help him.
Right.
He's got to want it more than everything in the world. And but he said to me one Sunday morning, I remember him coming over the house when we were in Kitchener, and he said, Don, he said, I know you go to AA, and he said, and it's kind of a religious, why don't you go to church on Sunday morning? And I says, first of all, I said, you're wrong with saying that Alcoholics Anonymous is a religious organization. It definitely not. But I said, I know that we have a higher power. Or I have a higher power.
Sure.
And I realize you don't have to go to church in order to talk to the man upstairs. And he stared and he looked at me and he said, Don, he said, you keep going or you're going on a Sunday. And I said, well, I intend to do that, sir. But you see, a lot of people don't understand what the program's about. They question things but there's 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm a firm believer, and I've told many people, they say that the door swings both ways. If you don't like it, the door swings both ways. But you can come there and you can work on some of the steps. And that is wrong. You have to work on all the steps if you want to get sober. But anyhow, the minister is... when he said to me, you keep going to where you're going now, and I think he didn't understand when he came, but after we talked, he says, I found out no more now by what you've told me than I knew before I came here. So I was, that gave me a good feeling. But anyway, back to the man upstairs, as I said, many, many times, I ended up going into business, started a new business right from nothing. And within 3 years, I had a very good business going. And in the fourth year, I bought out another company. And ended up amalgamating the two together because they went hand in hand.
What was your business?
I owned Milton Automotive and Industrial Supplies. I supplied car parts and I had everything, paint and industrial stuff. Got a lot of quarries around there. Ended up buying that company. I ended up buying was a rubber company, made hydraulic hoses, conveyor belting, and anything that quarries used, we sold it. Mm-hmm. And we made our own hoses up and put the fittings on and everything. And very good move. It went right with the business that I had.
Yeah.
Ended up selling it. I said that the day that I don't look forward to getting up and going to work is I'm going to sell. And it took a long time. I was in business for quite a while, many years. And that day come and I had people that were after my business. For about 4 years, they were wanting to buy me out. And I said, what I will do is I will give you the first opportunity when I do decide to sell my business. And that day came, and I went to them and told them I was going to sell. And we came to an agreement between the two of us, and they asked me to stay on for a year and get to know all the customers and stuff and that. So I agreed to do that, and I've been retired now for a few years, and a lot of things have happened in the years that I've been retired. As I said, my wife and I, we started cruising and every year and enjoyed it very much. And we had a lot of grandchildren, and we got 12 grandchildren and 7 or 8 great grandchildren. And they were a joy too, you know, still are today.
Yeah.
And from a guy that started and had nothing, but I got to give a lot of credit to my wife. Because it wasn't a very nice life for her when I was drinking. Mm-hmm. But today and the day I quit drinking is our whole life changed. My life changed, her life changed, and our family changed. And I look at it and say that the man upstairs, and that's what I choose to call him, is the man that helped me and helped me get the program and helped me to become what I am today. And I said it before, he's helped me several times in business and things that we came.
Because you and your wife met when you were so young, in a way, when she stood by you through those really difficult years, she probably had a glimpse into the person that was there, you know, that was struggling. But it's just such a wonderful story, the idea of her being patient and sticking it out and then getting to have like a whole life with you that was with you at your best, you know? Like, wow. That's such a nice and positive story, because 9 years that's a long time. That's a hard stretch.
Yeah.
The timeline, when you were describing being in the kind of high pressure automotive, when you were responsible for like 29 different people, or I think that's what you said. Mm-hmm. Was that when you were still struggling with drinking? Or was that when you were kind of entering into the recovery?
Yes.
Okay.
I had no trouble getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what I was doing. I'm not bragging, but I did. And I don't think I hardly ever missed a day, no matter what. I still went to work. Probably some days I shouldn't have. Mm. But I was there. I was very dependable. I was. My dad taught me that.
Mm-hmm.
That and another thing I wanted to say is my back in those days, the handshake was your word.
Yeah.
And nobody. There was very, very few. I mean, I made a deal with somebody, we shook hands. That was law. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's changed today. If you don't get it on paper, then you're in trouble. But any more questions?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't have experience recovering from a struggle with alcoholism, but I feel like any period of time where I've had a job and been unwell, it seems like even if you had AA to support you, to be in such a high pressure work environment and be trying to take care of yourself, that seems like it would be very challenging.
It was, yes.
Yeah. Like, do you think that, I don't know how to describe it, but like you mentioned how people wanting to address their drinking, that has to be their choice, that it can't, you can't tell a person or try to bring them in if it's not important to them. But do you mm-hmm. think there is guidance in terms of people getting out of work situations or out of types of situations that make healing harder? Like, is there somewhere in between where people can make some steps to at least be in a better place to then think about whether they could take on the healing?
Well, there's lots there's people, as I think I said, that think that they, I don't want to run anybody down because that's not me anymore. So say they can help. But my question would be, can you help if you've never been there?
Yeah.
Like the man walks a thousand miles or steps or before you can even in your own footsteps. And I think anything, if you don't have the experience, it's like I hired you and you for there's a job that you don't know nothing about.
Sure.
It would be awful hard for you to do that, to learn.
Absolutely.
And but when you had done that, if you'd done that for years, you would know how to do that, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the same as drinking for years. You're walking in those footsteps. You know all the ins and outs and ups and downs. Don't ever kid you. I can tell you, you get an awful. Sometimes you get an awful messes, and I think that a person that doesn't have any experience cannot help. This is just me speaking, so
yeah.
I have different ideas of some of the things that today they, and I must say that Alcoholics Anonymous has changed. Back in my day, there was no drugs. And now people are going to, I don't go to meetings anymore because I can't walk that good and everything today. So, but today they go to AA and they're talking about drugs. Now, if somebody came to me and asked a question about drugs, I wouldn't have an idea.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even think of thinking about it because I know nothing about it. And I don't know what it does or how it performs. But ask me a question about drinking, I can give you an answer.
Sure.
And so to me, there's possibly that people quit drinking on their own. I've heard of it. But when you get your sobriety, you're not only getting sobriety and stopping drinking, you're finding a new way of life, which is entirely true. You and the first thing, and I said, you have to forgive yourself before you can progress in the program. Mm-hmm. And as far as I think your question was, I did the job that I was doing and did it probably fairly well when I was drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But when the pressure came, I wouldn't have been able to handle it.
Yeah.
So, and I must say, like people say, they go to one, and I should have mentioned that. Some people say they go to one meeting a week and that's enough. I went 7 days a week.
Wow.
Twice on Sundays. Because when I made the commitment to become sober, I put my whole heart and soul. This has got to come before number one. Or you want to succeed as far as I'm concerned. But being dragged today, I don't know what the programs are today with I was at meetings and just before I stopped going was they were starting to talk about drugs and and I would just see come out and say, well, I'm here for alcohol, I'm here for drinking, I'm not here for drugs. So you know, but some people would say, well, it's just been, it's something the same. It is not the same. Yeah.
Fair enough. Having overcome something that huge, and I mean, overcome is even maybe a strange word because I've heard it described as being a lifelong commitment. So it isn't necessarily like you're done at some point, but having made it past the point where it was as big of a struggle in your life and into some form of thriving, are there things you learned during that time that are helpful now trying to navigate through this pandemic and even right now being separated to do different parts of the building? That, I mean, that sounds extremely difficult to me that you and your wife can't be together for this stretch of days. And I wonder if there's like experiences that you've gained that are helping you right now to get through this time and this challenge.
I think that I know without the program, and I still use the program, is that, and we always close by the a little prayer, if you want to call it. I don't think it's a prayer, but God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can. And I've said this many, many times since the virus has hit.
Yeah.
And not being able to be with her. And I say that prayer going many, many times at night when I go to bed, because after 68 years, it's pretty hard to be away from her. And I give her a lot of credit for me being here today and accomplished things that I thought would never would happen. If she hadn't stayed with me those 9 years, I don't know where I'd be if she hadn't stayed. And this is something that I've learned to find out what the word love is. And as a lot of people have a different description of what love is. And I think that I found out what love is really about.
I'm really happy to hear you say that. It's just such a beautiful thing to think of the years and years that you've got to experience things that you know you wouldn't have had otherwise, you know?
Yes, right.
That's amazing.
And I don't go around telling everybody that my story of my life. I think you're the first person I've ever, outside of AA, that I've ever told this story. And sitting here thinking about it, you know, it's It's beautiful, as far as I'm concerned.
I really appreciate you sharing with me. I feel like it's a lot to ask people in difficult situations to talk about difficult pasts, but I think it's so valuable for people listening who can relate to those experiences to hear the positive sides kind of from the future, you know? Like to hear from people maybe further down the path than them about what they maybe get to look forward to. So I think if you're willing to let me share it, I think it could be very helpful.
And well, I think possibly there might be somebody out there that just is thinking, that's having problems and just might say, well, like I said it, if the one guy one night at a meeting, if I had trouble when I first came in, and I said to him, if you can do it, I can do it with the help of the man upstairs. And I don't take credit for, I take some credit, I guess I wouldn't be lying if I didn't. But the man upstairs and the people they at the meetings, you talk, yeah, after the meeting's over, you just talk about AA. And that's what got me and keeps me sober.
Yeah.
And as I say, I can't get around very good anymore. So, I still use the words of the program, and that little verse that I said, I still, even I've laid awake at night worrying about something, and I got nothing to worry about. But I would say, I'd say to myself, I would say the prayer.
Yeah.
That little prayer. I would say that, and I'd go to sleep. You know?
That's beautiful. Yeah.
But you gotta want it more than anything in the world. And they told me that when I first come in. You gotta want it in order to get it. So I should say a few more. I said it once, and I'm going to repeat that. That the people here in this environment we're here, and we should be very, very thankful that we were here in this place.
Yeah.
Because you've seen what's going on in Toronto at the different long care terms and the other retirement homes. And once again, I'd say Bryce. Although I know I heard people say that we should do this and we should do that, he'd done everything possible to keep us safe, and that was the most important thing. But a lot of people can't see that, but I see it, and him and I are pretty good friends, and so he might not be a friend after he hears this. But anyhow, he'll do anything for anybody, to tell you the truth. He's that kind of got the personality to and I've heard so many times that these people say here that if you go to Bryce and tell him your problems, he will fix it. So he's a wonderful man. He's got a gift of to be able to handle this many people in both retirement and long-term care, and tell a person that they can't do something in a nice way and they accept it.
Yeah.
That's what I found about him anyways. And I'm glad to be here, so. And I just wish I could go over to see my wife, but.
I think it sounds like it's just a few days away, I think, yes. At this point. Yeah.
I heard that.
Fingers crossed that nothing comes up again. But
it was all set last time, and then the bomb, they dropped.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're sort of out of time now, but I am definitely over here sending all of my strength and determination to you guys that it will just be a few more days and you'll all get to be in each other's company again. And I just really appreciate you being willing to connect with me today and share your story. It means a lot.
Well, as I say, if there's a miracle, it happened to me. If there is, I don't know if there is or not, but it's but going from a type of person to what I am today, and I'm a guy too. I try to make friends with everybody. I talk to everybody, and I've talked to a few people here that have a problem too, you know, and. I get people coming to me, and I don't know why they come to me, because I'm just an ordinary bloke. So, but I think it was with all the problems we got in between the blacks and the whites, and I've been around blacks when you work in the cities and that, I have never found a bad one. But I think I'm going to just stay. I think it's too bad that person died, but they've gone way beyond that now to what they're doing. And I think the man's name is no longer involved in it. Because I hate the killing and the stabbing and the shootings and all that stuff. I'm a peaceful guy. I like to be friends with everybody.
Well, someday when I'm allowed to come back in the space, I'll be coming and trying to meet everybody in person that I got to see during this time. So if you're up for it, maybe I'll see you in person someday.
I'd love to do that.
Okay. Well, okay. Thank you so much for connecting today. And I hope you enjoy the sunshine that's finally come out.
Yes, I see it is. Yes.
Hopefully soon you'll get to go wander around in it again, too.
Well, thanks very much, too.
So once again, that was Dawn, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.